This episode of the Cinescare podcast is brought to you by the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Burbank, California, the happiest coffee shop on earth. Joe, do you know what I hate about those big corporate coffee shops?
They spit in your coffee?
Well, that too. Yes, I do hate that. Yeah. But it's the personality, Joe. They don't have a personality.
Of course not. They're faceless goons.
They're horrible corporate hacks. They don't know what they're doing. They can't make you a good cup of coffee. They certainly can't make you a Cinescare cup of coffee.
Hell no. No. No, they can't.
They cannot.
They don't even know who Cinescare is.
Well, Joe, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Burbank, California has personality in spades. The ladies who work there, they see me. They know what I'm going to order. They say, are you going to have the dark roast? And I say, yes. Are you going to have a large? I'm like, is it Saturday or a day of the week? And yes, of course, I'm going to have the large. Or would you like pumpkin spice? Do you have to ask me that?
Duh.
Well, next time you guys are in Burbank, you have got to come by. Or next time you're in California, you got to come to Burbank. We've got Halloween Town. We've got Dark Delicacies. We've got Camp Horror. All these horror-related stores are here. But the first stop you have to make is to the Ugly Mug Coffee House. And this week, and through Halloween, they will be offering a Cinescare podcast drink. You can order any drink you want on their menu and tell them to make it Cinescare style, and they will dress it up in a bloody bath of bonafide. I can't think of another B,
but sounds yummy.
It's going to be very yummy. So that is the Ugly Mug Coffee House, our new sponsor. Welcome to the Cinescare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And of course, joining us as always is the super fan, Mr. Mark Biscotti.
Hi, everybody. How's it going?
Great. My ears
great
are...
great to have you, Mark.
Thanks. Hey, my mouth is not on
yell,
fire.
Mark. Oh, you I'm don't sorry. Have to yell.
My mouth is not on fire. I successfully did a one chip challenge, and yeah, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, that was quite a one chip challenge too. So if any of you guys are following us or not following us on our Facebook page, Mr. Mark, super fan here, did the one chip challenge, which I don't know if anybody explain what it is, Mark. What is the one chip challenge?
Searing pain.
So Pocky has this one chip challenge where they have a ghost pepper / Carolina Reaper dusted chip, and it's enclosed in a this little package. It comes in a coffin, and I was watching the Bears game. And they're playing the Raiders, and I said, you know what, I'm going to sacrifice my mouth. And so if the Bears win, I'll eat the chip. I ate the chip. I decided to promote the Cinescare podcast while I was doing it, and the pain ensued. It wasn't as bad as I thought. I think a lot of people who do those one-chip challenge videos maybe over-exaggerate just to get some views or something. They milk it.
Yes.
I think I did okay. There was drooling. I did space out a couple times. But Matt, I think you're gonna do fine because I sent the chip to Matt.
Oh, did you? Okay, good. I will do it as well. I was a little relieved because it's even though it did seem like it was hot to you and everything. It didn't seem like it was like destroying you or anything like that. Although there was drooling certainly, but it didn't seem like, you know, I felt like, okay, I can at least do as well as Mark did. I think,
yeah,
hopefully. I know I eat a lot of spicy stuff, but we'll see. I'll put it on our on our CineScare TikTok.
And then
I'll share it to our Facebook. So this week, unfortunately, we were supposed to have Mr. James Oster, Jimmy O, the amazing film critic and horror aficionado. He was going to be joining us for our Halloween franchise, both episodes, actually. But he was having internet issues, and we tried and tried, and it just didn't work out. So we will have him next time. He said that apparently his area is having some kind of internet outage. So that he texted me and just now and told me that he found that out. So hopefully next time we'll be fine and we will get his amazing perspective on the franchise. But before we get to that, what are things that you guys have? I know I watched some things that were not Halloween themed related for Shocktober. As we've mentioned before, Shocktober is when we watch one horror movie a day. And so I did watch some non-Halloween things. So, Joe, what did you watch?
I'm going to change what I had originally said. And I'm just to clarify some things, get some clear water underneath this bridge. I did watch An American Werewolf in London. So now Mark can stop interrogating me.
That's right.
And it was good. I liked the transformation scene like everybody else does. I was not a fan of the ending. And I'm still holding true with I'm not a huge fan of werewolf movies, but it was okay. I also did see Terrified, which the last time we recorded, I had not.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay, yeah, I've been waiting for this.
I didn't hate it. I didn't love it either, though. It was just kind of fine. I thought it was a little confusing. But I still liked it quite a bit. But one thing that I'm bringing this up just because I would like both of you guys to watch this, cause I thought this was kind of funny, I guess. It was a movie called The Columnist that's on Shudder. I don't know if you guys have watched this or yet or not, but
I haven't. No,
it's a woman that's a columnist, believe it or not. And she writes for, I think, like an internet newspaper or internet blog or something like that. She has lots of followers, and every time she writes something, she gets criticized very badly. And one day she just cannot take it, and she goes to hunt down all of these people that have been besmirching her online. And it was actually kind of an interesting take, and I kind of dug the ending too, but I think you guys should watch that. It was called The Columnist on Shudder.
Oh, I'll have to look for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark, what did you watch?
With Joe's recommendation, I watched this movie right before we just start recording, called Halloween Pussy Trap Kill Kill.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how far you want to go into this, Mark. We might want to wait until Matt has seen it.
Do you want to wait?
Okay. I will watch it this week or before the next episode anyway.
Because it's something that I think only Matt can truly appreciate the acting stylings of Richard Grieco. He knocks it out of the park. He's going for the Oscar with this one.
He's
going
to win an Oscar, I'm telling you, Joe.
You really need to watch this movie. It's not just a name. It's a film.
Okay. Yeah. I'll hold off on that.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, Joe. Actually, yeah, well played on that. Yeah, we have to wait for Matt. I did watch Squid Game, the Netflix Korean series. It's about 9 episodes. I watched about like 4 episodes. Started at 10. To like 3 o'clock in the morning. I had to go to bed. Finished it the next day. It's a fantastic film. It's basically about people who are down on their luck. They don't have money. And someone just comes up to them and offers to play a game. And gives them money and says, hey, if you want to play some more games for more money, why don't you just call this number? They give you a card. The lead character does call the number, gets in the car, goes off, and meets about 454 other people. And chaos ensues. And there's six games in this, and it's a fantastic film. It's the most watched series on Netflix, I believe. And I know Joe saw it. And Joe, what did you think of this?
I liked it. It's the Korean Hunger Games.
It is. It's the Hunger Games. And I'm really curious, Joe, since you've watched it, without spoiling anything, out of 1 through 6, how far do you think you would have gone?
Oh, I would have finished.
You would have finished?
Yeah,
I would have died. I would have died after the second game.
No, I'd be walking around with all that money. I'm no slouch.
I know you're not a slouch, but you're saying you could have gone all the way.
100%.
Oh my gosh.
They were too easy.
The confidence in you, I love you. I would have been dead the second game easily.
Oh, I think you would have died in the first one.
No. I think I would have done good.
Yeah.
In the first one. What about you, man? What have you seen?
Well, I watched several things, actually. I was able to go to the West Coast premiere of a French film called Titan, which was directed by the same woman who directed the movie Raw. Her name is Julia Ducournau, I believe. It obviously has a French pronunciation that I'm not going to be able to do, but at any rate, she is an amazing talent, and this is a crazy, crazy film. This is the plot of the movie, and I'm not giving away spoilers. What I'm about to say might sound like a massive spoiler, but it's really not, because it happens in the first like 15 minutes, and it really is hardly the craziest thing that happens. But this woman, she's a dancer. And she's not really a stripper. I don't think they strip, but they dance in skippy outfits at car shows. They go and dance on these big muscle cars and these souped up customized cars. But it turns out she's also a serial killer. And so she meets up and hooks up with these women and men and then winds up killing them. And at some point, she has sex with a car. She goes into one of the cars that she was dancing on and has sex with the car and winds up getting pregnant from the car.
Can you go into detail how she actually had sex with the car?
No. Not really. I mean, they show her tied up inside the front seat and kind of, you know, with her arms out on towards the sides. And the idea, I guess, is that she's straddling the console and maybe there's a stick shift there. I don't know. They don't show it, but that's the idea. It doesn't really matter. She went, you know, the absurdity of it does, you know, it's not like you're going to explain something that absurd.
I'll only accept this concept if I can't be okay with her being impregnated by a car, not until at least I find out how.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But how did that happen? Yeah.
How does it happen?
It doesn't really matter. All that matters is in the world of this movie, it's part and parcel with what happens. It's a crazy movie. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's colorful. It's fresh. It is the work of somebody who is really a force to be reckoned with, I think, as a director. I felt like the main actress, not her, her performance was fine, but I felt like the character was a little two-dimensional for my taste. And I thought some of it was a little self-indulgent, but it was all in keeping with the tone and theme of the movie. So it didn't, you know, I mean, when you see it with an audience, everyone's laughing, everyone's having a good time, but it was, you know, unlike anything else, I think you'll see.
It's an origin story. I mean, that's where the Transformers came from.
It could
Autobots
possibly,
and the Decepticons. Yep, right there.
It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. And but it was the winner of the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, and it definitely is one of those you'll never forget when you see it. And there's not a boring moment in this movie. It is quite a film. I watched No One Gets Out Alive, which was an okay kind of haunting-ish sort of film. I watched Midnight Mass, which is the new Mike Flanagan Netflix series. There are some people, I've compared this to a church revival. Some people get caught up in the moment, caught up in the spirit of it, and they are amazed, you know, they get really into it. Other people are like, what's the big deal? I was a little bit more in the latter category. I did appreciate it. I thought there were some really cool parts of it, some neat aspects, but I thought it overall was just way too talky for my taste. I like films that are, I feel like film and this kind of television, streaming television, is a visual medium. And I really want to see the stuff more than hear people talking. It felt a little bit like a play in that way. It was a bit too talky for my taste, but don't take my word for it. I know a lot of people whose opinions I really respect love this show. So please give it a shot. And you might be one of those that loved it. It just didn't do it for me. And then I did also watch Beyond the Black Rainbow, which is the first movie by Panos Cosmatos, who was the director of a movie I absolutely love, one of my favorite movies of the last decade, Mandy. And this one is really Lynchian, very bizarre, very visual. There's hardly any dialogue in the whole thing. But it's fantastic and unlike anything you'll watch. It's not for everyone, certainly. It's very slow burn, very art house horror, but it's pretty amazing. And I love the visual language that Cosmatos has as a director. And it's very Lynchian, very Kubrickian, maybe. It's not something that you'll ever forget. It's not for everyone. Some people are going to want to just turn it off as halfway through because it is very strange and abstract in the way that it tells the story. But I love that kind of film. So it was perfect for me. And then finally, I come to a movie that both Joe and I watched called Coming Home in the Dark. And I'll let Joe talk about this one more.
Coming Home in the Dark is a gut punch of a film. It's you're on the edge of your seat. There's a family that they basically go on a little holiday, and they have a couple of unexpected guests that sort of pop up and ruin their plans, I guess, for lack of a better term. I can't tell you anything else other than that because I'll give away absolutely everything. This movie had me on the edge of my seat. It's a nail biter. It's very, very tense. And 15 minutes into the movie, you're going to get punched in the gut. And you're going to see something that you're just going to shake your head and say, did I just watch that? And you're probably going to rewind it because I know I did. But this film was great. I was a little perplexed at the ending. That's about all I'm going to say about it. There was something I had to watch the ending, I think, three times before I could finally accept what I thought I saw. But all around, very, very good film. Definitely held my interest for an hour and a half.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that ending, and I didn't have a problem with it. But I see what you mean, but I didn't really have a problem with it myself. But it's bleak. It is such a bleak movie. It's not one that is easy to watch, certainly. In fact, it's downright hard to watch. And that moment that you talk about, Joe, my wife actually, she was like, he did not just do that. You know, she exactly. Like said that out yep. loud. And so it's not an easy movie to watch, and it's not for everyone. I don't recommend it to people who are faint of heart, right? If you have trouble dealing, you know, with violence and a very bleak, nihilistic kind of movie, you're not going to like this. It's not going to be for you. There's not much to latch on to that makes you feel like there's a catharsis. There is one, but it's not the one you're expecting. And that's as much as I want to say. But I do think, I feel like by the end, how I felt about certain people in the movie, in fact, how I felt about everyone, kind of did a flip-flop by the end a little bit, you know, or at least, not a complete flip-flop, but I had at least an understanding of where the villains were coming from. And but that didn't make it easier to watch, certainly. It was not cathartic for you as an audience at all. but it was an aspect that you just don't see in movies. This is a New Zealand film, and I thought that main actor, I can't remember his name now, he was fantastic though. Didn't you think so, Joe?
Talking about the dad or the villain?
The villain.
Yes. He was fantastic.
I thought he was amazing. Like that performance, it was hard. I almost turned on subtitles because it was he had such a Daniel Gillies is his name, and he's a name that I'm going to watch because he's got a great look.
Yeah, and he's got to be in tons of other stuff. I mean, this has got to be a springboard movie for that guy.
Oh yeah, no, I think people are going to be talking about him for sure. And his performance reminded me a little bit of Sean Penn in Snatch. You remember how he had that kind of way of talking in Snatch?
Brad Pitt.
Yeah, Brad Pitt.
Yes. Gypsy.
It reminded me a little bit of that. That kind of way of speaking. That's very. It was hard to understand what they were saying. You'd catch words, so you kind of got the feel. But
the pikies.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Caravan. Gotta take a shit.
Yeah. It was very similar to that, actually.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
I have a feeling I know what the post-credit
scene.
No.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Oh wait, big trailer dropped today. The fifth installment for Scream. Did you guys watch it?
I have not watched it yet. No,
I did.
Yeah.
Does it look good?
No. Yeah. It doesn't.
I'm perplexed with the name of this film. It's just called Scream.
Yeah.
Not Scream 5, just Scream.
Yeah.
Which to me is confusing and dumb.
Yeah, it just at least, you know, make the 5 look like an S and make it something. Screams something. But just to have it Scream, I don't know. I am excited about this movie because it is directed by the director who directed Ready or Not. I'm sure you guys have seen that movie. It's phenomenal. Yeah. So I am excited about that, but this trailer is, I know they're trying to keep things under wrap and they don't want to show a lot, but just looking at Sydney in the same tan leather jacket, and it looks like such a hash repeat. Courtney Cox looks like a plastic doll, and I don't know. David Arquette kind of looks, there's a great scene with David Arquette, like reloading a gun in a hospital, I believe. They had the phone where this girl's like locking the door with her phone and the door's unlocking. And so there's a little.
It seems like they're just trying, at least from what I could see in the trailer, it just seems like they're trying to shoehorn an old formulaic, well-worked plan into today's settings.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, seriously, if Stu's not in this movie from the original, I'll be disappointed because I just don't see how this is going to be anything really fantastic. I got my fingers crossed, but, you know, what are you going to do?
And like I said online, I think it should be called Scream 5 Still Screaming.
Yeah, yeah. And it's being released in January.
Scream 5 Still Screaming. Oh, that's funny.
Still screaming after all these years.
And also I wanted to mention one other thing. You guys will notice by the promo at the beginning of this episode that we have our first sponsor, at least for the next couple of episodes, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Burbank, California. And I just wanted to remind you that they are going to be doing a CineScare drink, or at least they're going to CineScare up a drink or whatever, make it look interesting. You can order whatever drink you want, and then they'll make it CineScare style for you with little raspberry drizzle on top to make it look like blood splatter. And I'm not sure what color it's going to be yet or whatever, but it's going to be good. So if you are in the LA area, then you should definitely go to the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Burbank. It's a very popular place, and they do a lot of stuff. It's mom and pop operated. There are amazing people, Steve and Emily, and all their workers are amazing. And they do a lot of stuff in the community too. So very helpful to the community. So we couldn't have found a better sponsor.
When I'm in the Burbank area, that is the only place I get coffee.
Yeah. That should be the only place you, in fact, you should just fly here, go there, and then fly back. In fact, bring a bunch of coffee with you.
Okay, I went on the plane.
I went online, and man, that coffee, and they got like these muffins and scones. The place looks great. I'm actually jealous. I can't actually go over there because it's such a homey little place. It's just an awesome looking place.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, but if you go there this weekend, request a Cinescare with whatever drink you order. If you get, I usually get the pumpkin spice chai blended. I'll just do it Cinescare style, and they're going to give you a little Cinescare sticker to go with it. So,
aww,
yeah,
nice.
Okay, so this week, that old Halloween theme, that music, Joe. It just, I mean, I don't know what it is.
I can almost hear it in the background.
I can almost hear it. I can hear it in my mind's eye. What? Anyway, my mind's ear. I can hear it. It's playing, and I love it. But,
smell it in my mind's nose.
But you know, I know that that one gets a lot of airplay. But I think there's a theme called I believe it's called a haunted house that goes in the soundtrack. It's the track is called Haunted House, and it goes da 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 da. That is like when I play that song, I'll just drive to work playing that song, and it just gets me in that Halloween theme music feeling. I'm just like ready for trick-or-treaters and Michael Myers and everything else. I'm so pumped. And today in the mail came my Fangoria, which has Halloween Kills Michael Myers on the front cover. So I'm pumped. So let's talk a little bit about the Halloween franchise. How do you guys want to do? Start with five, or what do you want to do, Joe?
Yeah, just to recap so everybody following along at home realizes what we did. We started at number five and then worked our way chronologically up until the 2018 release, including the Rob Zombie 1
right.
and 2.
Yep.
So we are saving the original 1, 2, 3, and 4 for the next episode, as well as by then the Halloween Kills would have come out on Peacock and in a theater near you.
Right. And we will all have seen it by then, so we can talk about Halloween Kills and where we think it's going and all of that. Unfortunately, I wish Jimmy was here because he was at the premiere. He had info for us he could have given us, but unfortunately it is in
Jimmy internet. Told us how it ended.
Yeah, he did.
No, he did not.
Yeah, and you know, I can't believe it was Fozzie Bear all along, Joe.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Yeah. Anyway, so number five, it's kind of hard to talk about number five without talking a little bit about number four, because is it a year later, I guess? But
it's a year later.
But Jamie Lloyd, who is supposedly Jamie Lee Curtis, or I'm sorry, Laurie Strode's daughter, is in it. She and so it picks up from her story. But it sort of at the end of Halloween 4, and I could be wrong about this, but at the end of Halloween 4, Jamie, of course, kills her stepmother, right, in the bathroom. And that sort of sets up this idea that, is she going to be the new Michael Myers or whatever, right? And it's sort
spoiler
of the same
alert.
Story. Well, if people haven't seen Halloween 4, please.
Yeah, what are you listening for?
This is going, by the way, I guess we could warn people, there will be spoilers in this. If you have not seen any of these Halloween movies by now,
Tons of spoilers.
Then stop it, watch all of them and everything. So there will be spoilers. It's not like the new, you know, Halloween Kills, we won't give you spoilers, but everything up to that point is going to be spoilerific. But anyway, so she kills her stepmom at the end of Halloween 4, and it kind of sets up this idea that Jamie Lloyd is going to be the new Michael Myers, I guess, right? But of course, when they do part 5, Mustafa Akkad probably was like, no, I have to have Michael Myers in this one too. So they kind of change it so that, I mean, they never discuss it, but because Jamie Lloyd's stepmother's never, or adoptive mother or whatever, is never there, but at the same time they never say that she didn't die, but it's never discussed again, right?
Right, right. No, I know. I don't think they discussed it in 5 at all. I've seen Halloween 4 maybe like 10 years ago. So actually, when it was nice to have a little recap at the beginning of Halloween 5 because they just start blowing them away, like just shooting them, throwing grenades. He falls down in a little mine shaft.
Right.
And so I was like, I kind of remember that. I remember Jamie and I remember the blonde from 4. But that's where it kind of gets crazy because he starts going down a stream, just floating down a stream.
Yeah.
catches some net. And then he just climbs himself up, and he's been riddled with shotgun and bullets. I'm like, how is this guy, you know, even like standing hardly? And he gets into a log cabin, and there's an old man there with a parrot. And do you guys want to?
It sort of reminds me, and I thought that Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie Halloween 2, had a little bit of this too, but it reminded me a little bit of the Frankenstein story.
Yes.
They didn't really go there, and I would have been cool to, well, I don't know if it would have been cool to see a Frankenstein-like thing with Michael Myers.
Fire.
Yeah, exactly.
But fire.
This was my what the hell moment, because this guy keeps him in a coma for a year.
Yeah.
One full year. Michael Myers' corpse is laying on a table in a log cabin for 365 goddamn days.
Yeah.
I'm not buying it.
Not buying it. Was he feeding him soup? How does Michael Myers go to the bathroom? Was he just laying there? Has he been just in a coma?
I saw no sign of an IV anywhere or nothing.
And he's still wearing the same clothes. The old man's still wearing the same clothes from 365 days later. It's just like, all right, cut. All right, let's start.
He's got to smell terrible.
It's got to be bad.
There's a real sense, and as I was reading about this, it turns out to be true. There's a real feeling that they were kind of making things up as they went along with this one. Like they brought in...
Shocking.
But they brought in the Man in Black in this movie, right? And started the whole Thorn thing. And they even said the writers didn't know who the Man in Black was. They weren't. They had some idea that maybe he could be Michael Myers' twin brother, or maybe he could be just like Michael Myers, but whatever it is, the writers didn't really know who he was going to be. They just introduced him figuring that whoever did Halloween 6 could figure that out.
It was a cowboy. It was a cowboy. And right. Boy, did he had some shiny hell of a silver tiptoed boots. But he's got the tattoo. He's got the tattoo on his. So, I mean, that carried on, but I don't even know if they even knew what even that tattoo was supposed to mean, because Michael Myers had it. And so, I thought like they had an idea, but apparently they didn't.
Wait, I have a spoilerish type question. Not that it matters, but wasn't the Man in Black later on the guy that was the head of Thorn?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, but, I know that's the next movie, but
But they didn't know that when they made part 5. And it you know, sometimes things like you'd think, oh, maybe they're planning ahead for something to do with this character. They had no idea what was going to happen. They were just hoping the next writers who came along would figure it out, you know. But, you know, Mark, you mentioned the going down the river thing. That made me crack. I laughed out loud at that because it was the slowest moving river ever. Why didn't he just stand up and walk out? Like, he's going down, and it was you could see the actor trying to push himself down the river. There was no current to that river, and he was just bumping. And so I kept thinking
bumping
to myself.
Bumping into rocks.
Right. You know, you could put, like, if Mystery Science Theater did this, they would be going, ow, 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 ow. Yeah.
And another thing with the old man, okay, so Michael Myers tried to kill him, strangle him, and then he collapses, and he takes care of him for a year. Doesn't go to the police. Just that also threw me off.
Speaking of Jason, actually, because I've watched way too many horror films, when I saw that Man in Black for the first time, I kept thinking it was the Man in Black from that Friday the 13th Friday episode. 13th. That's, you know, the guy that was Quint was going to bring in the head of
Jason Goes to Hell. Jason goes to hell. it's basically the same character.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. And then the whole Thorn thing. Thorn turns out to be like some sort of cult group that is devoted to some kind of demon.
Well, that's part six.
Right, yeah, but Thorn was begun in part five. So the whole Samhain thing. What I didn't understand, and I suppose it's now that I thought about it, wouldn't it have been cool if whatever cult was involved in part three, right, Season of the Witch, had been the same kind of cult.
But the problem with that is that I remembered
this morning while I was having my breakfast, I was thinking about timelines, because that's one thing we got to get into tonight is timelines, because Halloween has the screwiest timelines of all. But the part three, they show Halloween one on a TV in that, so it can't even be a part of this timeline in any way, but that's neither here nor there.
Back to part five.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the one where, was it Jamie, the little girl?
Yeah.
Is that the one where she's in the, like, children's psychiatric house?
Yeah. And they had that, okay. She has boy.
Yeah. Who in the hell let Dr. Loomis in there? I mean, he's not, he shouldn't, he's like, it was the minute she like starts to have a nightmare, he is running up to her like 2 inches from her face and yelling at her, "You've got to help me. You've got to help me."
Yeah, you know, there was one scene where he's practically laying on top of her.
Yes.
Who's Tell me
running
where
the
he
children's
is.
Ward?
Why Somebody, are you hiding him?
Why isn't there an orderly just like, I'm sorry, sir. You're going to have to leave. You're
disrupting all
of our patients.
This guy needs to retire.
Oh, my God. Switch to decaf, Loomis. Something. Just leave that little girl alone.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's great, though. It's great.
I mean, that's when you watch 5 and 6, 1, 2, 3, and 4 all have some coherence, and there's an interesting story to all of them. And there's no doubt that all of them have the biggest like cult followings. But 5 and 6, you just got to go into them thinking, I'm going to have fun with this, because there's nothing that makes sense. There's nothing beyond. It's goofy. It's watchable, though. That's the good thing. But I didn't remember most of this movie. And I've watched it a few times, but this time when I watched it, I even checked the description to see if I was watching like a director's cut or something, because I was like, I don't remember most of this movie. And I know the last time I watched it was maybe 5 years ago. So it was bizarre to me.
The clown music for the two cops.
Oh, yeah.
That Joe's cops. That's magical.
All clear.
Nothing above, nothing below. Rescue cats.
Fine dogs.
That's a job.
And we love it.
That was the most magical part of that entire film. Two policemen are walking out of the house, and they have walking music. They have walking circus carnival clown music to escort them down the stoops. I loved that. Yeah. I watched that. I like rewound it 6 or 7 times.
For like 2 seconds, there's a little blip of music.
It's 4.8 seconds, Matt. I timed it.
The first time I heard that, I'm like, did an ice cream truck like drive by on the street and they forgot to take it out of the soundtrack or what?
They bring it in again though once they leave.
Yes. Yeah.
It was like for a split second because they start walking. I'm like, what?
And then I took a few notes.
Yeah.
One, I think you're gonna love Joe. There were three lines right in a row that absolutely made me laugh out loud. Jamie says to Loomis, "Can you kill him?" And Loomis says, "I think so." And then the sheriff walks up and goes, "Now, wait a minute, Loomis. And I'm like, why is he trying? What? This guy has murdered people for a decade in this town. Dozens of people, for actually more than that. Dozens
We're
of people.
Subscribers of due process here in Haddonfield.
Don't be talking crazy. The guy killed it. In fact, Michael Myers killed it. The sheriff's daughter in the previous movie, and he's like, "Now wait a minute, let's not get carried away here."
Oh, the sheriff. His name's Bo Star. Do you know what gangster movie he was in?
No.
Bo Star. The actor who played Sheriff Meeker in Halloween 5 and Halloween 4 played Henry's father in Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah. I remember that now.
I was looking at this guy and he's acting. I was like, I've seen this guy somewhere. And then just that image of him with a belt beating the shit out of his son because he was skipping school.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, that's him.
Okay. I also said, I don't remember most of this movie. This movie has zero fall look or feel. There's nothing. It was shot in, both 4 and 5 were shot in Salt Lake City area. There's very, they must have shot it in summer. There's no even attempt to look like it's fall. It has the worst mask by far of the entire series. There's a lot of dumb cops. Why would, Michael's, and then the house. The house that is supposed to be Michael's house looks,
it was blue,
absolutely nothing like the house from the movie.
It was blue with the spiral like on the left hand side going up. Had nothing to do with the original house.
It kind of looked like the house from 4 that Jamie was living in, I think, or the one that the sheriff was living in, one or the other. But it didn't look like the original Michael Myers house at all. So, and the ending was very strange.
Yeah, can I just make a tad bit saying about our final girl Tina? One of the funniest, I think, and one of the most non-likable final girls I've ever seen. She was so over the top, just giggling, laughing. She had ADD. It seemed like she ate sugar her whole entire life. She wasn't really like fun at all. But what I did like about this movie was the car scene when Michael Myers was in Tina's boyfriend's car and pulls up and she gets in the car.
And she thinks it's him or
her
boyfriend.
And she thinks it's him. I think it's great.
Yeah. And he keeps driving with her, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, there are moments when Michael just does stuff that you're like, I don't get it. And there's one like that in Resurrection as well, where he walks up to Busta Rhymes. Busta Rhymes has on the Michael Myers mask, and Michael Myers is standing there, and he doesn't kill Busta Rhymes right there because it was almost like he was thinking to himself. I want to see how this plays out. You know, it's very bizarre.
But she's in the car and she's going, I want cigarettes. And Michael keeps on driving. God damn it, I want some cigarettes. He slams on the brakes and then goes in reverse and then stops and just waits for her while she's getting a pack of cigarettes. And then the cops come and he just takes off. Oh, what a great scene.
I know. That was fantastic. Yeah. Good use of music, though. I did enjoy the music in this one. Joe, did you have anything else you wanted to say about 5, or can we move on to 6?
A couple things real quick. Loomis has no idea what gun safety is because he uses his gun to turn on a light switch at one point.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he didn't do it very well either. He was fumbling with the switch to try to get it off.
Yeah, he couldn't find it.
Yeah.
The boyfriend, the rebel Mikey guy, just that archetype, that, you know, Arthur Fonzarelli ripoff thing. I was glad to see him go. There was a car crash in the woods that had this gargantuan explosion, and it, like, the front of the car hits a tree. I always thought the gas tanks were in the back.
Yeah.
But it was like Hiroshima. You know, when this car just tapped a tree trunk. Unbelievable.
The same thing happens in Halloween 2 to an ambulance that crashes into something and just explodes. These things are the vehicles in these Halloween movies are like powder kegs just waiting to go.
It's like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's all I had. You guys can move on to the next one.
Well, Halloween, that brings us to Halloween 6. And Halloween 6 is one. Did either of you watch the producer's cut or just the regular one?
I don't know if I. No, I didn't. It was on Amazon Prime, and you could have watched it on there. But I didn't feel like renting it for $3.99. So I bought the DVD where it was Halloween 6, Halloween H2O, and Resurrection. I got it for like $7.99. So
that's what I got.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So neither of you watched the producer's cut.
No, did you?
Well, what the producer's cut came from fans recut the movie on YouTube.
What?
Because so that it would make more sense and more and be just better. And so they were like, okay, and they released it as a producer's mix or a producer's cut. And I think they did their own cut that was similar, but they basically took this fan edited version of the movie. And from what I understand, from what I read, could be wrong. If I'm wrong, please somebody out there comment on our Facebook. But I believe what they did is they just took that and kind of added a little bit their own. And but I still can't tell exactly what the difference is between the two. I did feel the producer's cut flowed a little bit better, though. But of course, we are introduced to Paul Steven Rudd.
Steven. Paul Steven Rudd.
He had already become, he must have been cringing when this movie came out because he had filmed it well before Clue. They came out the same
Clueless.
Year.
Clueless.
Why do I keep saying Clue? Yeah, Clueless. He had filmed, I think, this movie like a year before Clueless came out or something, the previous year. And then he shot Correct. Clueless. And Clueless came out before this movie and he was a big thing in it, right? And his name in Clueless was Paul Rudd. In Halloween 6, they have him as introducing Paul Steven Rudd. It's not a great performance from him. And the only note I have on Halloween 6 was, does Tommy Doyle just stand in the window all day? Because they keep walking by and he's standing in the window.
Such a pervert.
I know.
Well, I think they're kind of like making him, maybe he's going to be like the next Michael Myers or something, just standing right in the window, just like Michael Myers did.
Yeah.
I think we should like go a little, not too much into this film, because I think Jimmy's going to have a lot to say about this film, and he could probably say a little bit next episode.
Why do you think he's going to have a lot to say about it?
Because he's a big fan of Part 6.
Part 6, okay.
Yeah, with all the lore and the thorn and... But I know Joe's got a favorite character in this film.
I do?
Yeah.
The dad.
The dad.
Oh, yes, of course, the dad. I forgot all about him. He's he's the biggest dick he's ever seen.
I know, he's such a jerk. He is such a jerk.
He's so great.
He's drunk all the time. He wakes up in the middle of the night, and he's already looking for a fight from his family. He's the epitome of every dad in that time era. Oh, I loved him.
He always wakes up on the wrong side of the bed because both sides of the bed are the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is such a jerk.
Yeah.
And of course, they saved
the best death in the movie for him, you know, probably for that reason. He just explodes.
His head explodes.
Yeah.
I could probably talk about the dad for days, but I want to make sure we don't skip the fact that Jamie must have been 14 years old when she had that baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was doing the math on that one, and that just didn't add up at all.
Well, this movie came out in what year?
Oh, God, I don't know.
That was Resurrection.
It's got to be 89 or 90 or something like that, right?
Part 6 would have been, 90, something like that. And I think Jamie was like 5 or 6, wasn't she, in part 4?
Yeah.
I think part 4 came out and then I'll look it up, but I think part 4 came up and then part 5 came out a year later, and this one might have been a few years after that.
All I know is that
Halloween 5 was in 1989.
Right, and part 4 was 88. This is 1995. So
right.
by
she
this
was,
time
she was 10 and 5.
She was 10 and 5.
And this is 4 years later. She was 14 years old.
This is 6 years later. This came out in 1995, and 5 came out in 89.
85 really? And 89, that's 4 years.
95. This movie came out in 95.
Oh, 95.
Part five came out in 89, so that's 6 years.
6 years. Okay, then she was eight when she was in five.
And so right. then...
6 years later, so she's 14 now. Yeah.
Yeah.
14. Chose her. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she looked... She was 24 years old.
And nobody feeds that baby until like an hour and 10 minutes into it.
It's crazy.
And never says a word, never cries. I'm like, if any of my kids ever went that long without getting fed, the neighbors would know.
Yeah. Did I
miss any explanation for how Jamie got pregnant? Was she pregnant with Michael's baby?
I don't know. There was no explanation of how she got pregnant.
Yeah. There's nothing.
Right. I think she had sex with a car.
that could have been. That would have been a better explanation. Actually, wow. And I was reading about this. Danielle Harris really wanted to play the part and wanted to have this as her send off, and they didn't want to pay her what she felt she deserved. They wanted to pay her just scale for the day because it was just going to be a small part. They were just going to pay her scale for whatever days she worked, and she wanted a little bit more. She felt like she deserved a bit more. And they just walked away and cast someone else. They didn't really care.
And Mustafa, definitely well deserved, because Danielle Harris, she's a good little actress. I mean, I had no problems watching her on the screen in four or five, but she gets her money in the Rob Zombie films.
Yeah, well, that's the good thing. But yeah, she was really good in 4 and 5. I thought she was, you know. Yeah, especially in four, she was so young in that, and really, I mean, they put her through the ringer in that. I it's sad that they didn't get her in there, but, and of course the whole Thorn thing. It turns out Michael is basically being controlled by a group of, I don't even know what to call them. By this point, you're like, yeah, it's a cult. It's a cult Some of Thorn,
Celtic,
right?
Celtic cult.
Yeah, I really was wishing that they were going to have like Stonehenge around them, and that there'd be those masks in there and everything, but I guess not.
There was some really, really bad ADR in this film. Like I had to go back to make sure that my DVD player like wasn't out of sync, and some of the sounds, the Foley work that they did on that was just atrocious. Yeah. However, my favorite line in this entire film is when they're at that festival and that little kid is out there and he keeps saying, "Mommy, it's raining red."
Oh.
he's getting bled on. The kid is that stupid that he doesn't know there's blood or something. Like, maybe you should look up and see if there's a body that was thrown up in that tree.
Yeah. No, I actually thought that scene was a little creepy. It was a little girl with the blonde little girl.
I thought it was a boy.
No, it was a little girl. Actually, that was like the creepiest scene out of the whole film.
Regardless, whether it was a boy or a girl, for as old as that kid looked, they know what blood is. And if they see red dripping all over them, they're not going to say, "Mommy, it's raining red."
Fair point. Old enough to know that blood, it looks like blood, and rain never is red. Okay. Well, as much as I would love to just talk about Halloween.
Oh, can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
At the end, when the cult was in the hospital and the head cult guy, it was like, went into an operating. What the hell were they operating on?
I don't remember now.
I don't remember.
It wasn't the baby, and it wasn't Michael, but they all went into an operating room, and he had like red scrubs on. But
they had Jamie strapped in there, right?
But no, they weren't operating on her.
Yeah, what were they doing?
I don't know. I'll have to go back.
That was the last note that I had, because I rewound it a couple times, but I could not figure out for the life of me what was on the operating room table.
Yeah. Well, jeez. You know,
probably the man in black.
Those are questions for Jimmy.
Yep.
Because if Jimmy is, it's not surprising Jimmy's a big fan of it, but okay. Then we come to, I guess, H2. Yeah, it would be Halloween H2O, colon 20 years later, which Joe, I kind of felt like they missed an opportunity here because they could have done back in 2008, they could have done, or no, 2018, they could have done a documentary called Halloween H2O, colon, 20 years later, colon, 20 years later.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
I would have called it H2O still Halloweening.
Love this movie. I love this movie. It's the scream of Halloween because that's what's happened. This was the aftermath of the Scream phenomenon. You had Kevin Williamson produce this film. It completely shows, I mean, self-aware teens, the beginning of a film that completely takes from the beginning of the movie Scream. It even has the same music from Scream. And it's directed by Steve Miner, who directed Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3. And this movie, I think, has the best actors out of the whole entire franchise. No, well, not the whole entire franchise, but for I think from 3 all the way up to H2O.
It's got a really good cast, yeah.
Yeah. You got Michelle Williams, you got Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I'm sorry, who?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Lovett.
Is his name Lovett? How you pronounce Levitt. His name?
Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I've been doing that for years.
You can just call him Jiggle, JGL. That's what I call him.
Jiggle. even Janet Leigh's in it. Her
yeah.
mom. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. Joe, what did you think of this?
Speaking of the Janet Leigh part, I wanted to point out that the car that she was leaning against is the same car from Psycho.
Yeah.
And did you notice that the license plate is NFB, which is Norman Bates, his initials.
Oh, I did not notice that.
I love that homage to it. I did like it. I have lots of questions. Like, for example, why does it start in Langdon, Illinois, and not Haddonfield?
I'm assuming because that's just where Loomis and his nurse lived, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. I just assumed it was some sort of neighboring town, but I didn't know if I missed something that
I don't think there was a reason for it. At least nothing that would be from the movies. Yeah.
One slight thing that bothers me, but it's not just in this movie or necessarily in this franchise. It's in all movies. Whenever anybody picks up a knife, they all sound like they're getting released from a giant metal sheath. You know,
yeah,
I can pick up a knife off a wooden counter and it's still going to go schling.
Yeah.
But I do have questions like, you know, although they all have to do with the T word that I know we're going to discuss later, but I didn't realize that she had a son because I don't know. I used to look back on this whole franchise very fondly. But I think all I'd ever remember is numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. But when we start getting into these timelines and how this movie counts for this timeline and this movie doesn't, and in this movie she's got a son, but his son is never mentioned anywhere else throughout all the other movies in the franchise, that's when I start to get a headache.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you just got to not worry about it so much, Joe.
I haven't slept in a week.
I know.
It looks it.
I was worried for you. It's just, I mean, are you going to worry about timelines for 5 and 6? My God. Like, that one, you just, like, chalk it up for whatever. I don't know. And then H2O, the only thing I will say, and I was trying to make this point earlier, and that there's one thing that gets in the way of this, but I was going to say.
Cool, Jay?
No, but timelines, in terms of timelines on this, 1, 2, and 4 obviously are part of a timeline. 5 and 6, of course, add to that, but they incorporate something else that never gets picked up again. So 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, because, you know, 5 and 6 bring in Thorn and all of that. Those all fit as a timeline, right? There's nothing. I don't think there's anything contradictory about any of those movies in terms of being one timeline, right? Three, four, Three, of course, is its own thing.
Why wouldn't H2O fit in with four, five, and six?
I'm getting there.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So the thing was when they first wrote when Williamson or whoever came forward to write the script for Halloween H2O, it was going to originally, Williamson's idea was that it was going to be Halloween 7, The Revenge of Laurie Strode. Okay. Now, and horrible his idea, his, what's that?
Horrible title.
Well, it would have fit in with The Return of Michael Myers, Revenge of Michael Myers, yeah, okay. And Curse of Michael Myers.
Got it.
And so it would have been, he was going to tie it all in together. And that the story would have been that she'd faked her death. And Jamie, you know, they would have acknowledged Jamie, right, as being her daughter, which, what does that say about, you know, I mean, that's problematic because she's going to fake her death and leave her daughter. The only way I thought of to explain that would be that she knew she was in danger and that Michael would always find her, and so she left her daughter with somebody else to take care of. But then in H2O, they have Josh Hartnett as her son, so that kind of throws a wrench in the idea of that being a part of the main timeline. Because A, his age would be about the same as Jamie's, I believe, right? This movie came out in 98. And
yeah,
in fact, he'd be older, right, than Jamie?
So
he'd Josh be in Hartnett, high school, right?
Josh Hartnett would be Jamie's brother and sister, correct?
It'd be his, at least his half brother, or so her half brother.
He'd be an uncle already.
Well, no, because Jamie,
had a kid.
They'd be half siblings. Oh, he'd be the uncle of Jamie's baby.
Jamie's baby, yeah.
But I'm talking, yeah. Well, that's true, but. But I don't in terms of age, Josh Hartnett is about what, 17 in this movie?
He's supposed to be a senior in high school.
Yeah, 17, 18.
Yeah.
So, and you said that Jamie was 14 in part 6, right? Which came out in 95.
Yeah.
So that would only make her 17. So that it doesn't work. It doesn't work then. Yeah. But
right.
Unless it was Laurie Strode was never mind. No,
yeah,
got pregnant by two different guys.
Yeah, they decided
at the same time.
They decided to go in a different direction.
They cut it off after 6, and it's because of what happened with Kevin Williamson and how popular Scream was. And I Know What You Did Last Summer. The producers of Halloween says we got to go this route. They scrapped everything. Halloween and Halloween 2, and then they went to H2O. Jamie does not exist anymore. She doesn't exist.
Well, but that was Williamson's original idea, was that she would exist, and that his original script was going to be that part 7 where she existed and everything. But when they brought in the son, then there's no way that the two could coexist. Yeah, but the only part of that they kept was that Laurie Strode faked her death. They kept that part of his original idea for where they were going to go. The rest of it they scrapped.
Talk about deep and hard.
Yeah.
Going into some lore here. I did love that one scene with the garbage disposal scene. When he's like reaching into the garbage disposal, and I thought that was a really tense scene.
Yeah, that was
I was very disappointed with that.
I didn't get to see the kill, but I loved how the scene turned out with the tension, because that's one of my greatest fears is a garbage disposal, sticking your hand in there, and how he kept on staring at the switch, if it's on or off. And then Michael Myers is just the cherry on top and back. And then when he turns around, it's such an honest and great reaction. He says, hi. Like he just got, or hello. I believe he said hello or hi. And it was just an honest reaction. It's like he just got his hand caught in the cookie jar. I just love that whole entire scene. It's really, really intense.
I just simply wanted to see Michael Myers walk over and flip the light switch on. done.
Oh, God, that would have been horrible.
That would have been great.
I know, I know. I just...
They were trying to tease and everything. Another note, it's so 90s with the references to other movies and the meta and all of that that they did in this. It was very Kevin Williamson. The hockey mask, is a nod to Jason, of course. It's a similar hockey mask to Jason's. They did that as a nod to Jason. Janet Leigh in her car from Psycho and the Psycho theme playing. I thought that was, I know you liked it, Joe. I thought it was a little on the nose. But I thought one thing that was interesting was H2O Laurie and 2018 Laurie. They're both approached this as people who survived trauma, but I felt like H2O Laurie was sort of in hiding and it kind of broke her a little bit. And she was, she seemed a weaker person until her son was in danger. And then she got Mama Bear on him. But what we meet is a very fearful person, right? At the beginning, she's afraid to let her son go anywhere. She's afraid to go anywhere on Halloween. She's very broken by trauma. Whereas in 2018, it's a person who's been empowered by trauma and is the opposite, is like fighting, and learning how to use weapons, rigged her home to be, a booby trap kind of thing. So there are two like different versions that were both, I thought, equally interesting.
I enjoyed the H2O Laurie Strode more than I enjoyed the 2018 Laurie Strode. I thought the H2O was much more believable than the Sarah Connors Strode in 2018.
I'd like to know where she got all of her money for this bunker, because my guess is at the end of H2O, she probably lost her teaching license.
It doesn't count. That's a different timeline, Joe.
Also, I said I thought the sound cues were overboard, and the whole scene at the truck at the gate, I just didn't think it worked. It wasn't as creepy as it was supposed to be, especially they show LL Cool J walking around inside the security hut there, and then Michael steps into a window and they do a boom kind of sound cue, and it's not effective. It's not in his face. The mask is terrible. They just can't get this mask correct. After number two, there's not a good mask until 2018, in my opinion. Well, Rob Zombie's, I guess, is fine, and 2018 I like, but from four through H2O, the masks are awful.
Resurrection.
Why didn't he kill LL Cool J in that whole scene where he's walking around the it seems so out of Michael's character not to just kill him there.
He's a national treasure.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You don't kill LL Cool Zoo. Yeah.
You don't kill Busta Rhymes either.
Even Michael Myers has that, huh?
Yeah. And it celebrates that guy's whole catalog.
So that brings us to Resurrection.
Yes.
Which I think, if someone was to just explain to me what Resurrection was, the story idea, the plot of Resurrection, I'd think that's kind of a cool idea. You're going to do a remote, online streaming of, events, whatever, and then Michael Myers actually shows up. That's, I guess, sort of interesting. The execution of it was awful, just terrible. To me, and I'm sure I feel like there aren't that many people who probably like Resurrection very much. It's the most maligned, but I'm sure just like any of these movies, there are people who love it. So I really don't like shitting on movies that people love. So
been shitting all hour.
Well, not really, because we had fun with some of
these
others.
Fun,
this is the first one that I could say I really felt like it was a horrible movie, and to me, it's the worst in the franchise. But what did you guys think?
This is the greatest one.
I don't know how they could call it Resurrection with that whole bullshit startup thing that Michael never died in the last one, because there was some confusion at the high school, And when the paramedics came in, Michael Myers killed the paramedic and switched clothes with him. All right, so if he was never dead, then how could he resurrect himself?
It's right.
That trope was just terrible.
Yeah, that was awful explanation. That was a terrible explanation.
You know the story behind that, right, with Jamie Lee Curtis? Because the only reason why she was going to do H2O is if she gets to kill Michael Myers. And then when they had the set all set and with the costumes, and then they said, oh, there's a clause, we can't actually kill Michael Myers. And
Mustafa Akkad, the producer, has in his contract, and I think Malik does too, or Malik or whatever his name is, they have the same clause in their ownership of the rights that Michael Myers will never be actually killed because they want to keep making money. It's their cash cow, this thing.
Their cash cow, yeah. So that's what happened.
I would like to point out that there was a part where the kids were dropped off at the Myers house, and they had to get onto the front porch and start clipping on their gear, which were the microphones and the cameras.
Yeah.
Did you guys happen to notice the sound that they added to that?
No.
No.
It was guns, like guns being loaded and cocked.
Oh,
was it not plastic buckles being clipped together. Yeah, it was. I rewound it and listened to it like three times. It was terrible.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
I didn't even notice that.
In case nobody's picked up on this yet, I watch movies with my ears mostly.
I guess so. And you are perplexed by some of the weirdest little details I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was just terrible. I also don't care for Tyra Banks when she's walking through the garage with all the TVs, how she's just snapping her fingers and they're just turning on like she's a new Fonzie or something.
Yeah. The clapper?
Yeah.
Yeah. The sexy dance making a latte.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And Busta Rhymes' karate is like the lowest form of the partial arts. I mean, it's just...
You know what had to happen on set. He's going, look, I've been watching some Jackie Chan flicks.
Yes,
let me tell you. It's like he was into like martial arts. You saw it in some of his music videos. He's going, hey man, let me karate chop Michael Myers, man, please. And the director's like, do whatever you want. You're the headliner. He's literally the headliner.
Yeah, no, they probably had to tell him you're gonna get to fight Michael Myers. You're not gonna get killed by Michael Myers and all this.
Trick
stuff,
or treat, motherfucker.
Michael Myers, who never listens to anybody, is actually gonna listen to you, Busta Rhymes. And if you tell him to stop, he will.
Yeah, and just, then at the end, that last line, it was so ridiculous.
What's the last line? I forgot.
I got it written down. Trick or treat, motherfucker.
Oh, it's trick or treat, motherfucker.
No, no, the last line when he's being interviewed by the, by the news. I don't remember now. Michael Myers isn't some blah, blah, blah. And then,
I want to know what hardware store that girl bought that. I got to get one of these silent starting chainsaws, because she's hiding in a closet or a cabinet or something, and then all of a sudden springs out from the cabinet and the chainsaw is already running, and I don't know how that's even possible.
Yeah,
maybe it's an electric start. I got to get one of those.
Oh, can we talk about the younger teenagers who went to the party and he's
what's with that?
What was that? Like they're in the party. It's like everyone's drinking beer and he's gonna like sneak into like the parents' little office room and he's like typing in, and then by the end of it, the whole party is in there just surrounding him. Dude, what the hell was it? It was all the reality.
Couldn't they have had that movie and cut out all of that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, they could have done that without that people watching online, for sure. Yeah. And it didn't make sense that he's texting somebody who's in the movie, like, on the show. Like, it's ridiculous. And who's going to take that seriously, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to say, oh, they're really being killed. You would say, oh, they're setting this up. This is so stupid. And then you walk away, and then maybe the next day you find out it was all real, and everybody goes crazy for it. But
they had nudity on there too, and that's against the law. And
it
was crazy.
Yeah, you can't show nudity on the internet.
No. Yeah, you're right.
What are you talking about?
It was live, damn it. You can't do that.
Mark still has a lock on his computer. Okay, so I don't want to drag it out anymore. Let's keep going. Let's just talk about the zombie movies as a unit.
Sure.
I think I saw it when it came out, the first one, and then the second one I never did watch, and I watched it this time. I thought I had, and then I realized as I was watching it, no, I've never seen this before. But part one, it's just, you know, the Rob Zombie hillbilly aesthetic. I just, it doesn't do anything for me. I know he's really into it. I'm not sure how you become somebody who's really into that hillbilly aesthetic, but it doesn't really fit with Halloween. I know he's making it his own. I get that. I respect that. But I don't think, and I wrote this down as a note, evil doesn't need a backstory.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
Michael Myers, when he's just evil, that's what I love about Michael, is that they never tried to make him any more than that. They never tried to make him into any kind of maybe not respectable, but somebody that you could at least understand, an understandable character. It was always just pure evil, and that was his function, was just to be an evil killing machine, nameless, or not nameless, but faceless and devoid of any emotion. There's, you know, he has no emotion when he's killing. It's just he's a killing machine. He's an inevitability, and I love that. In the zombie version, he decided to show that he has a crappy home life and, you know, give a reason for him to be a killer. And that, to me, just isn't as interesting as it might sound when you're talking about it. And it certainly isn't scary to me. What did you think?
I didn't mind so much. I hated the breakfast scene and just the constant swearing and mother effer and this and that.
You know, Mark,
it's too much.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't normally care about swearing at all, but there's something about the zombie dialogue that it's just, it's not like I'm offended by cursing. It just feels like
he doesn't know how to write a script or write dialogue. So he just says,
it feels
effing like this and mother effing that. And
it feels like a 14-year-old boy who thinks cursing is funny and any cursing is funny and then leave it at that. And it just doesn't work.
They're just sentence enhancers.
Right. Yeah. In most movies, they're sentence enhancers. In this, they are the sentences.
They are the sentence.
They
are
the sentences. Yeah, it's just too much, and you're already like desensitized. Thank you. By that, and by the end of that breakfast scene, you're just done. It's like you don't even care. If they just cut all that out, I actually didn't mind when Michael Myers was in. Why are you laughing?
He's desensitized.
Yeah, I know.
Desensitized. I think I was just thinking. I think we have a new. We have a new button at the end.
Damn it. Yeah. I didn't mind actually when Malcolm McDowell and Michael Myers was at the institution. I didn't mind so much of that. That was okay. Because if you cut out all the Rob Zombie and Sherry Moon, hey, let's film my wife on a pole, you know, because it was just completely just dumb to even have that. And at the end, you can cut probably 10 minutes off and actually condense it. It's not a bad film. This film actually does take off. And Rob Zombie is a very good director, in my opinion.
No, I think that, and I've always said this about him, I feel like in terms of the look and feel of his films and the way, you know, some of the editing and the zoom-ins and the close-ups and just the feel of his films, he is good. And I loved about Halloween, both of these movies, is that they went back and shot them in Pasadena again. So it did tie into the look of the original film. So that I thought was pretty cool. And it looked like a Halloween movie. It felt like a good atmosphere. So I liked that. And I did think once they got out of the backstory, it moved along. If this movie had been about a half hour shorter, I think it would have been a solid, tight film.
35 minutes, yeah.
You know, once you get past the hillbillies, you're in much better space, I think. So, and then Halloween Part 2, the Rob Zombie, is... I don't really know, Joe, what do you have to say about that? I don't have a lot to say.
I got questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Like, did any of that stuff in the hospital actually happen?
Okay, so here's my theory.
What do you mean?
Well, okay, see, so I'm a huge fan of the original Halloween 2. Mm-hmm. I loved that. All the stuff taking place in the hospital.
Right.
So, like, Michael Myers comes in, finds Lori, stalks her, she goes out to that guard shack, the guard gets killed, all that other stuff, and then there's like a lightning strike, and she wakes up back in her room. Yeah. So did none of that stuff happen?
I don't think so.
It's another timeline, Joe. It's another timeline.
Jesus Christ.
Because listen, if she dies, I've looked this up on the internet. A lot of people think she dies, and then the rest of the movie is her going to heaven or hell, and that's why you see the white horse and whatnot. So there's two separate timelines. So maybe there's seven timelines in this movie, in the franchise. Look at Joe's face. He's gonna collapse.
I don't know about that. And I have never seen that online written about it. The only thing I could think, I just assume that it's a dream sequence and that it was him sort of saying, I'm going to do what they did in Halloween 2 at the hospital and then pulling the rug out from under you and saying, nope, we're not going to do that. We're going to do my own thing.
Right. Yeah.
So I felt like that's what it was. But that first 20 minutes in the hospital was really good. Like I was liking that.
It was fucking great.
If the rest of the movie had been like that, this would have been the greatest sequel horror movie, you know, in a long time. I would have loved it.
He does the original Halloween as a remake and homage to the original Halloween movie in 1978.
Sure. Right.
Why, if he would have just continued his part two to be the same sort of homage to Halloween part two, we would have been fine. He started off doing that. And then, like you said, pulls the rug from underneath us.
Well, he wasn't even supposed to direct Halloween 2. He got into Halloween 2 because they were going to do another sequel to his Halloween. And he was like, no, I can't have anybody touch my version. So he goes in and directs Halloween 2, and then he just goes off rails, man. He goes off rails with this film.
I kind of like to know what happened to the original actor that played the young Michael Myers, because he's different from the second one to the first one.
He actually became too grown
too
up.
Big.
Yeah, too big. Cause, I mean, he was a big kid as it was. Not like it's width size, but he was a larger kid, and he just grew. He sprouted.
Yeah,
it wouldn't match.
It was, I think, I know the movies came out 2 years separate, but I think they filmed the first one even earlier. So yeah, I think he grew quite a bit. It might have been 3 years between filming. So
I also had a problem with the guy that played Michael Myers in the second one. Is he different than the guy that played Michael Myers?
No, it's Taylor Mayne. It's the same guy.
Okay, because I don't remember him grunting when he killed anybody in the first one, but he does all the time in number two.
Right, I hate that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Myers did grunt in the original.
In the original,
in 1978. Yeah.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No.
No.
I don't remember him emitting a sound.
When he's strangling...
I didn't care for this.
Plus the manner of which he kills people in this one is just I don't want to say obscene, but I can't think of a better word for it. You know, the original Michael Myers would stab somebody and they're dead and he'd walk away, but this one, this guy's re-stabbing somebody 10 and 15 and 20 times.
Yeah, and then standing over him. It's very Rob Zombie.
And then giving us that stupid cockeyed look. Like,
yeah.
Are you really dead? Like a puppy looking at you, confused.
Right, overdid that a little bit.
Rob Zombie basically started off really good, and then he went complete hillbilly, just like, you know, Devil's Rejects and all that. He just went complete hillbilly and just did his own thing. And but I do understand, like, people do really like this film. He's a good director, damn it.
This movie has a huge cult following, part two. Not as much part one, but a lot of people love part two. Yeah.
Well, part two is the only movie out of all of this franchise that has Weird Al Yankovic in it. So, I mean, I can see why people are a huge fan.
Yeah.
Or as they call him on the show, Mr. Weird.
Boy, he makes Loomis look like a total dick in Halloween 2. What a dick.
Yeah. Oh, he's horrible. Yeah. And that doesn't work for me either. I feel Loomis should be it. I just don't. I didn't care. I get making your own choices and making your own things, but I just, zombies, all of his characters tend to be dicks. You know, they're all just,
everybody's filthy. Everybody's greasy.
Everyone's filthy and no one's really all that likable. Even Lori wasn't all that like, certainly wasn't all that memorable. I like Danielle Harris in this though, but.
She's great in both films.
Yeah, in both. And I'm glad that they let her live because Annie in the first movie, of course, dies in, you know, in Halloween 78. But in this one, they let her live into the second one and is she alive at the end of the second one too? Still, I don't remember.
I believe so.
Yeah,
I believe so. I don't like that Michael eats the dog.
I didn't think that was necessary. Came from the first movie. He eats a dog too, but you don't. Yeah, and
he's
kills
gotta
the dog.
Eat. He's got to eat. It's not going to go to McDonald's. Yeah. The guy's got to eat.
Okay. And then, I was just reading that somebody was trying. They were trying to make a sequel to Halloween 2, the zombie one, not Rob Zombie, someone else. I'll have to look that up and I could talk about it next time. But I read in part of my research, I read that there were a famous director was going to make a sequel to the Rob Zombie movie. And it was just in an interview I read the other day.
You heard it here first. Steven Spielberg's going to be doing part three of Rob Zombie's.
Yeah, right. Not that famous. And then we come to finally Halloween 2018, just titled Halloween. It is a reboot back to part one, not even part two. It's a little confusing to people, and I wish they'd done this, but what they had planned to do was a drone shot of a reconstruction of the first Halloween movie, 1978. And they were going to do a drone shot of when Michael gets shot and falls off the balcony, you know, and they look out and he's there and then they come back and he's gone, right? So they were going to start at that point and do a drone shot following him running through Haddonfield until he gets pulled over by the police and arrested. So that was going to explain how this movie was picking up and that all this time Michael was in this asylum all this time. Halloween 2 never happened. None of the other movies happened. It was just going to be a jump to 2018 to tell the story, to finish the story in a trilogy of Jamie Lee Curtis's Laurie Strode. So I really liked 2018. I came into it with some trepidation, worried about what they were going to do with it. And because it is such a, favorite, franchise of mine. I really was worried about it. I was hoping they were going to do it well and do it right. And I was quite, I sat there with a smile on my face through this movie. I remember watching it. The scene, I'll just pull up this scene every now and then too, where Michael is walking through Haddonfield while the trick-or-treating is going on. Love the scene. Love the atmosphere. It is perfect. The one scene I wish they would have cut and not kept in was the asylum with the podcasters. I just didn't like, I am fine because it gives him a way to get the mask back and brings him into that. I like the scene where he kills them in the bathroom stall and all that. That's all great. But the way it was set up, I wish they'd just done it differently. It just seemed so.
It was poorly shot. With the other inmates just laughing, and it kept cutting back to the other inmates. It was a poorly shot.
Like this was a scene that the production. I could be wrong about this, but it felt like the producers were like, this scene needs to be a big, powerful scene, and they were doing everything they could to make it as powerful and dramatic as it could be, it would have been so much more effective to just have him in a small white room trying to talk to him, you know, that way. And have it be a simpler scene and have everything go from there. But, you know, I don't know. What can you say? How about you, Joe?
I really like this one. I like Judy Greer in this. I like the whole cast. I don't mind the podcasters. I think they were trying to find a way to ground it in a time frame.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't mind the podcasters either. Yeah. I didn't like that opening scene in the courtyard. I wished it had been done somewhere else and in a more subtle way. That's all.
Oh, I gotcha. So you don't have a problem with podcasters in general.
I love podcasters.
what podcasters has $3,000 just to
yeah, I wish we were that successful.
That's yeah, like, no kidding.
That's like, grand around.
That's like Joe Rogan style or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I agree that, yes, it was probably not the best setting to introduce those characters. But I do appreciate how they tied it all in about how they got the mask back, like you said. And yeah. I love that bathroom scene.
Oh,
that bathroom scene is just fantastic.
Did you guys see that one scene? Because I slowed it down to 1.2 seconds when Michael Myers is going, when she's in the bathroom stall, right? And you see him without the mask, he's smiling. He's smiling. It's the first emotion besides Michael Myers crying in part five with a single tear. He's actually smiling. We watched it 10 times, and it's creepy as shit.
I'll have to check that out.
You got to do it. 1.2 seconds. Just like having it in forward or reverse. You can see him. He's smiling. And he looks like Reno, the professional guy, doesn't he? A little bit, because he showed the French actor, Impossible. He looks a little like him.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I think he's a really good Michael too. And of course, they also
great
had
Michael.
Nick Castle came back, and he's the one walking around town on Halloween night. Most of the action, of course, is done by the new guy. I can't remember his name now, but Nick Castle, the original Michael Myers, came back. I wish they would have brought Tony Moran, but of course, he doesn't really look like he used to. But
how about that one continuous shot though that they did when they first introduced like Michael Myers in
the trick or treating?
Yeah, I timed it. I timed it. 2 minutes and 53 seconds, .15 seconds of the continuous shot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that long. It's not like a Martin Scorsese shot, but
no, but
man,
there's a lot
is
of
it good.
There's a lot of elements to that. All those trick-or-treaters and everything, that could not have been easy to set up. Now, I don't know if there were any hidden cuts, because sometimes, like in Birdman, they did a lot of hidden cuts that you don't see. So I didn't notice any, and I looked for them. I didn't see any places that seemed to me like they might have been hidden cuts. They're really good at disguising them now, but I didn't see any that I could tell.
Maybe when he was going out the front door after he hammered the shit out of
that. That's what
woman.
I'm thinking, yeah.
Yeah, maybe, but it looked beautiful. And just that's when I was in the theater and saw it. I just went, oh, I love this film.
I also want to point out that I like the actor that played the dad, Toby Huss. I've always been a silent fan of his ever since the old MTV days. He used to do promos. He used to do these promos where he was, he does a fantastic Frank Sinatra impression.
Yeah.
And he used to do these promos where he would sing Two Princes by Spin Doctors as Frank Sinatra. And I've loved him since then. And I was so happy to see him in this movie.
If you want to call me baby, go ahead now, and if you want to make it, maybe, then go ahead now, and if you want to grab my trousers, then go ahead now, and if you want to boost for hours, then go ahead now. Two crazy princes kneeling down.
Yeah, he's great. And I love the mom. I love Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter,
Judy Greer.
She's an underutilized actor, and I think she's fantastic, and she's perfect in this film. I liked the kids. The boy with the curly hair, who was the chubby kid, he's really funny, and he was on an airplane with me when I was flying back from Iowa when I went home for my dad's funeral, when I flew back, he was on just a couple rows ahead of me. And
you didn't say anything to him?
I didn't get a chance. You know, it's one of those things where what can you do? And then I didn't see him. I was going to talk to him after, and I didn't see him. Like, I was going to.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was going to talk to him. But, you know, I didn't. And I couldn't really get to him. It was awkward. So I did message him to see if we could get him on the show, but he hasn't responded yet, so we'll see.
Remember me? I sat behind you on the plane.
I sat a couple rows back. I had a CineScare t-shirt on. Did you notice? Anyway, but I thought he was really good. I thought that I loved the party. There was just this, it was a return to setup, a good setup. I love it when you know, Michael, you know, we had the good kill in the bathroom, and of course with the mechanic, but that bathroom scene is so good. And there are little nods in this to the other movies. I feel like the bathroom scene is very Rob Zombie-like. And in the way that the kills happen and everything, I felt like it was, if Rob Zombie had orchestrated that scene, it would have been similar to that. It was pretty brutal. It was a pretty brutal scene. And there's some other little nods along the way that kind of reminded that they had the masks. Trick-or-treaters were wearing the masks from Halloween 3. There was something that reminded me of Halloween 4 too, and I can't remember what it was, but I thought there were little nods to some of the highlight sequels. So anyway, that.
And it ties in with, because Judy Greer plays Paul Steven Rudd's ex-wife in Ant-Man.
Ooh, oh, that's right. She does.
So it always goes back to Paul Steven Rudd.
Oh, that Paul Steven Rudd, I tell you.
I have one more comment. Even Mark referred to her earlier as the... Sarah Connor.
Yeah.
Laurie Strode in this one. Yeah. And I don't have a problem with that at all, because I think about it that if I was her, I would probably be living that lifestyle too. And I loved her firing range with all those mannequins back there.
It
was so creepy. And I'm glad that it came back when the daughter was running through it. I was like, when I saw that the first time, I'm like, oh, I bet you that's creepy at night. And then we get to see it, which I was thrilled with. So
no, I like this Laurie Strode. I like both of them. I don't feel like, you know, one has to be better than the other. I enjoyed both of them. I mean, I like 28.
I think it was a little over the top.
I like 2018 more than H2O as a movie. But I don't know. I didn't have a problem with this Laurie Strode. I like the idea. I mean, you could be either, and they both make sense. That's what it comes down to. The Laurie Strode of H2O that at the beginning is afraid of everything makes sense if you went through that kind of trauma, or the Laurie Strode of 2018 that never was really able to feel comfortable in life and felt the need to fight all the time. That makes sense too to me. So I like them both.
Well, the doctor in 2018 did explain it in the car with Will Patton. He was like, you know, trauma does different things to different people. So, I mean, they did explain that. I appreciate that. I just thought that the house was a little bit too, you know, doors closing and trapping and all that kind of stuff. I thought that was just a little bit overboard.
Yeah, maybe.
Actually, when she pressed the button in the doorway and behind her the gate went down, I saw that and I thought, huh, that's a pretty neat idea.
Are you going to do that in your house, Joe?
I'm thinking about it, actually. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I liked all that room with all the mannequins, too. It was really creepy,
too.
That was
I remember in the theater, I was like, holy shit, this is pretty freaky because you can't see who's who.
And I loved the opening credits, by the way, which I also, you know, opening credits, a lot of these movies don't have great opening credits. This one had a great one. It was the rotting pumpkin, you know, in reverse coming. And they did the pumpkin right, where there's a line cut through the nose and just like the original. So I loved it. I really liked 2018 a lot.
Good old Danny McBride, man.
Yep, Danny McBride. You could see some Danny McBride dialogue, especially between the cops in the car.
Oh, and the little kid.
Yeah,
and clipping
the
little, his, and the, yeah. clipping and his the, toenails.
And the dad.
Yeah, the kid yeah. being babysat. And then of course the kid who was talking to his dad in the car about wanting to be a dancer, very Danny McBride humor. So, and then of course the cops with it. That looks like a meal of a 5 year old or something. It's very Danny McBride. So
a balmy sandwich, peanut butter jelly balmy sandwich.
Also, if you you may not have noticed this, but the boyfriend of Jamie Lee Curtis's granddaughter in this movie is. His last name is Elam, and they mentioned that his dad's name is Lonnie. Lonnie Elam is the kid who sneaks up to the Myers house in the very first movie, and Dr. Loomis scares him away. Yeah, it says Lonnie, and he's also the one who tells Tommy Doyle that there's a boogeyman who's out to get him.
Okay. Scratch that one from the trivia. Thank you.
Oops, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
So,
1 point for Matt.
I was actually poor James. I actually had a trivia question, just one trivia question to start off for the next episode for one person to be a point ahead. But unfortunately, we can't do it.
Sorry about that, Mark.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. Well, that. Should bring us to the end because we are really this is the longest episode ever. But I guess you know we.
It's Halloween.
It's Halloween, and there were a ton of movies in. We didn't do a good job of splitting them in half. But next time we will be talking about the first four, and there's a lot to say about those. Plus, we will also hopefully have other movies that because we're only watching four movies the next 2 weeks, so there will be other Shocktober movies for us to talk about. So, and we'll, of course, hopefully have Jimmy with us, so there will be even more to talk about. So, I guess that would be it for this time. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Please go to the Ugly Mug Coffee Shop, and we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Do you sense the fact? Caravan! Gotta take a shit!